Welcome to another episode of the ECCDC podcast. I'm your host, Katie Lynn Parkinson. Today, we're excited to bring you a rich and reflective conversation with two incredible guests, Stacey Benge and Andrea Strange. Stacey is an early childhood speaker who approaches learning in the early years with practicality and common sense, standing firm on the truth that children learn best through simple, authentic experiences. She advocates for child-led play to build solid foundations for child development. In addition to a Master of Science degree in Human Development and Family Studies, Stacey spent 10 years in the early childhood classroom teaching children from ages birth to five. As she has for the past 20 years, Stacey shares her enthusiasm for child development with fellow early learning professionals through enlightening and informative presentations. Stacey is the author of The Whole Alphabet Child, How Young Children Actually Develop Literacy, published by Exchange Press. She is available for keynote presentations. Located in Texas, she presents virtually, locally, nationally, and internationally. Andrea is a K-12 literacy consultant with Niagara Catholic, where she supports educators in implementing evidence-based literacy practices rooted in the science of reading and structured literacy. As an Acadians-trained mentor, Andrea provides targeted professional development and coaching to build educator capacity in utilizing universal screeners and diagnostics across all age levels to close learning gaps in literacy. Andrea is deeply committed to helping school systems create equitable literacy experiences that ensure every student has the opportunity to become a skilled reader and writer. Today, they offer a thoughtful look at the continuum of literacy development, exploring how play, movement, and intentional teaching practices all come together to support literacy development in meaningful ways, from early learning environments to classroom settings. Whether you're working with infants, toddlers, preschoolers, or school-age children, there's something in this conversation for every educator. Let's dive right in.
Wonderful. So welcome, Stacey and Andrea. I'm so excited to be here with you both.
Thank you for having me.
Hi, happy to be here.
Today, we're going to be talking a lot about literacy. So I wanted to start with something foundational. When people hear the word literacy, they usually think about books. They think about reading. They think about sitting down and writing your name. In early learning, though, it can be so much broader than that. And if we're going to be talking about literacy a lot, I want to hear from you. How would you define it when we're talking about literacy with young children? I wonder if, Andrea, if you wanted to get us started.
Sure. So when we think about how students learn to read, we have a framework to draw our expertise on, and that's Dr. Hollis Scarborough's reading rope. So when we think about all of the component skills that are needed to create skilled readers and how that affects us in the early years. So the simple view of reading, decoding ability, and language comprehension comes to create skilled readers. And so in the early years, we really have to lay a strong foundation through oral language and while getting kids involved in turn-taking and using rich language to go back and forth in conversation, pulling rich language out of read-alouds, right? So really with a strong focus on developing that oral language so that later on all those other skills in Scarborough's reading rope are going to come together for them to create skilled reading. I also think about like phonemic awareness and understanding of how sounds work without print, right? And then adding the print to it as kids progress through their skill levels.
When I'm looking at early literacy, I think of the whole child. And, you know, working with children birth to five, our focus should be on really the whole child, because, you know, reading and writing, at some point it gets to, you know, holding a book and writing, but like, what are those foundational skills? Where does all that start? And like Andrea mentioned, the, you know, the phonemic awareness, that phonological awareness, the visual perception skills, like the brain's ability to understand the information coming in from the eyes. And then one of my huge passions is physical development and how that all ties into literacy and how important that is for not only writing, which I think we can like typically, connected, but that reading as well. But then the social and emotional aspect, the language aspect, it really and truly early literacy builds upon the whole child being developed.
I love both of your definitions because they have such a different perspective. And I think about literacy from infancy into toddler, into preschool, into school-agers, and where that focus is. And I could hear in both of your answers all of that definition and how it supports children throughout their growing. I also wanted to connect in with you're talking about social emotional. You're looking at that turn taking, that link into big body movement and play. How does movement play into literacy development? If it's not sitting down and sitting still and reading a book, what is the connection between movement, play, and literacy development? And can you share a little bit about how those elements intertwine to support early literacy?
Well, I think it's important because a lot of times when we talk about early literacy, we don't always make that connection of how physical development supports it. And when we look at how the body develops, starting with infancy, going through early childhood, we develop top down, middle out, and that supports a system known as mobility on stability. Well, that is critical in handwriting. That's critical in all the small movements depending upon the bigger muscles being developed and stabilized. We also have our internal senses, which is our vestibular system and our proprioceptive systems. And our vestibular systems keeps our body steady, keeps our head steady, and then keeps our eyes steady as it's reading text. That also keeps our hands steady as we're writing. And our proprioceptive system tells our bodies how much strength to hold a pencil with and how much pressure to put on the paper. And then there's the body's ability to cross midlines. And if you think of when you're sitting at a desk in elementary school, we have that asymmetrical bilateral coordination where one part of the body is still and the brain takes the other part of the body across. So that's our handwriting, that's holding our book and turning a page. But all of that develops best through child-led play. So in our early years, it starts with our infants on tummy time and crawling, and then our toddlers climbing, and then our preschoolers spinning and playing on the playground. That's what develops all of those muscles, that stability, all those processes that are really, again, critical for future reading and writing.
So
Yes.
interesting to even think about like the pressure that you use on a pencil and how that big body or even just like cross body movement, because if you hold it too soft, you're not going to get the pressure on the paper. If you hold it too strong, it's going to be really hard to write. What are your thoughts, Andrea?
Yes, I really enjoyed what Sandy said about crossing the midline and the physical development that's necessary, right? When we think about gross motor and fine motor skills and how the development of the fine motor skills is connected to the cognition of the brain when we learn hot handwriting. So I think incorporating big movements like crossing the midline in physical education classes, that is a way that we can like build a bridge between setting the conditions for learning to read. I also think when I think about teaching to read, I think about teaching in multiple modalities. So incorporating play in kindergarten, like maybe where it's wintertime and the kids are putting on their mitts, and we might play a game saying, let's put on our, I'm gonna do actions here. I don't know if it's a video to your guests, but let's put on our it. So for those listening, like touching your head, shoulder, waist. And so they're identifying the sounds and the word mitt, but they're playing and it becomes a fun little game while they're waiting in line. And then I also think about playing movement games when you're blending sounds together, like pulling a race card across certain letters that the students might be learning at the time to blend consonants. Consonant, vowel, consonant words together, the three-letter words. So, yeah, across multiple modalities, like using, developing fine motor in shaving cream or in sand, and getting kids lots of experience with making the printing formations, still definitely has a role in the kindergarten classroom and below as well.
Even just thinking about shaving cream and sand and all of those juicy words that you could use to describe what they're feeling too. I love how you speak about it in play, and especially during those times of transitions, because often we think about, I have to go from, you know, playing to outdoor time, and all that in between is just, I have to use that to get back outside. Instead, slowing down, connecting in with the children, singing a song, playing a game, making it into a rhyme, that learning is happening throughout the day. It's not only during our learning times. It is when we're getting ready to go outside. It's when we're playing. It's when we're eating, and using those moments to have fun with children and to play with them. How would you support a family in understanding what literacy is in early years if they have that traditional point of view?
I think, you know, just finding opportunities to get the conversation going with families, and, you know, kind of meeting them where they are, and maybe it's doing it through newsletters or just face-to-face conversations, but, you know, reassuring them, yes, you know, future reading and writing is very important. That is the, you know, the goal, but let's talk about these foundations that we need to develop the first, you know, few years of life that will support future reading and writing, and maybe connect those dots for families to say, hey, did you know, just like when you go to the grocery store, if you just write down a few things on a piece of paper in front of your child and let them hold that while you're at the grocery store and mark them off, let me show you how that's literacy. Let me show you how that supports, you know, print awareness and why that's important. But I think us giving them still things that they can do with their children, but then showing this is why it's important. This is how it's building a foundation, and this is how it will support your child in the future.
Yeah, I definitely agree with everything Stacey said. And in our system, we hold family literacy nights once a year. So where we're inviting parents in the beginning of the year in kindergarten and speaking to them about the instructional routines we'll be using and the expectations and how they may change, right? The exposure to like science of reading-based literacy, rich learning tasks in year one, but our expectations change for them as they get into year two and beyond. So even though we're exposing them, our expectations would be different based on developmentally where the child is at. And we do a lot of work in our board with Kate Wynn, who is a science of reading guru, host of the Reading Road Trip podcast, and she is also a kindergarten teacher. And so we will have her, one of the top leaders in the field, in virtually to speak to parents. We have done that in the past in parent friendly language so that we can develop the conversation together. Kate Wynn also has a series of parental video clips that she has offered to local news organizations, and we've kind of got a hold of those and use those video clips as a conversation starter. And just knowing that we're on the same side as the parents are in wanting to lay the foundations leading to rich literacy skills in your child, right? So that we're working together.
Yeah, and it's that here's what we can do while they're in our care. Here's what's developmentally appropriate for those children. Here's the goal. Here's where we're at right now. And I think even we all have such different learning styles. So Stacey shared having a newsletter, having some different hands-on pieces that they can be doing at home and what that looks like and how simple it can really be, like having a grocery list or reading together and naming all of the different letters. And then here's what we're doing while they're in our care here too. And we invite you to come on in and to see what that looks like in practice. And they can take a lot of those strategies home with them. I know that many educators out there thinking about that traditional approach when we think about literacy are familiar with the letter of the week approach. And Stacey, this is something that I've heard you talk about. And so this was a question that I was dying to ask you. It's a classic. It can be a little controversial. What are your thoughts on the letter of the week practice? And in your perspective, are there some more effective strategies for teaching the alphabet?
You know, what's funny is the basis of my book was a training I wrote about 12, 13 years ago on moving away from letter of the week. And back then, like when I would start speaking on it, like people are very protective of that. But when we look at research, actually, that's one of the least effective ways to introduce the alphabet, and even letter of the day as well. And so when we're looking at how do children learn the alphabet? First of all, they have to have print awareness, which is understanding when they see a letter, when they see text, that it carries meaning. And then they also have to have an interest and connection. And when we do letter of the week, and I do this in my trainings and actually have this mentioned in my book, I throw fake letters on a screen and I'm like, hey, we're gonna glue things on it, we're gonna sing songs about it, we're gonna eat snacks, you know, that start with this letter. And then I always ask people, you know, if I was to ask you next week, would you remember this letter? And they're like, no. And I'm like, you know, first of all, it's made up. But the reason you won't remember is it doesn't connect to your life. It serves no purpose in your everyday world. So there's no reason for you to connect to it. And children are the same. So if we do approach the alphabet in a scripted way that doesn't connect to their world, you know, each child has an ecosystem. And if what we're doing is not connecting to them, they're not going to connect to it. So the way I suggest approaching it is more of a holistic approach where, first of all, again, we make sure that print awareness and that interest and connection are there, but what letters are important to children? So it's the first letters of their first names. And we can introduce all those letters of the children in our classroom at that same time. And it's amazing they start picking up on, of course, their letter, but then their friends' letters as well, because that's what's important to their world. And then we start spiraling in letters as we start to see children, you know, maybe Mason has a new brother named Thomas. So the letter T just became important, and we're all talking about Thomas. But you start spiraling in the other letters as they become relevant to the children's world. But research shows that there really is not just a sequence that you should introduce, and that whole class instruction is not effective because, again, we have to connect to each child's world. So what's important to them, we start there, and then we just kind of spiral in. As they grow and develop, and what's important to their worlds.
Andrea, what are your thoughts on the letter of the week?
Yeah, so I, as a kindergarten, you know, for 20 years, have been guilty of this practice of introducing a letter of the week. And it would be Valentine's Day, and I wouldn't even be at the letter V yet. So, like, a lot of that was a waste of time. Now, we are learning and continue to learn about structured literacy through the science of reading, that the vast body of knowledge of how the brain learns to read. We know that research doesn't prove that letter of the week is effective. So we can also, through the practice of structured literacy, introduce kids to two or more letters a week, where if we get students to a point where they're about 80% mastery, that they don't have to master the letter sound combinations before we're introducing other letters. So we can then spiral the skills in an evidence-based way. And so in kindergarten, we use the manual that has been backed by 100 researchers, cognitive behavioral scientists, and neuroscientists, called U-Fly Foundations by Director Holly Lane, in order to introduce letters and the grapheme phoneme correspondences, the letters and the combination of letters that make the sounds. And yes, absolutely. Like, of course, lots of work with students' names, because they're that early recognition of names and how they serve a purpose, and that the letter sequence matters. I think is a great early start as well.
I think it's so interesting how we can reflect on our practices and kind of look at new science and just go, I was so convinced that this was the way to do it. And to not completely change it, but to really take in that I guess it's probably not even necessarily new research, but sometimes it's new to you or it's presented in a new way and saying, okay, well, how can we support children authentically where they're at? And so thinking about those authentic experiences, I love the idea that learning grows out of those real moments, those real experiences, things that they can connect to, those everyday things that just click for children. Would you be able to provide some examples of some of those experiences for literacy and that impact that we have on young learners? And I wonder, Andrew, if you wanted to get us started on this question.
Sure. So we definitely have to be very intentional when we're setting up our literacy-rich environment. We understand that we want to ensure that kids have multiple opportunities to speak, to read, to write, and to be exposed to all that rich language. So, in our manual in kindergarten that we use, UFLY Foundations, it has kids repeatedly practice speaking, reading, and writing. But then we can also pull out those rich language experiences through read alouds. And when we expose kids to the beautiful vocabulary words and very rich read alouds that are full of complex words in context that are exciting and joyful for kids to learn. So I think that idea of reading to children and setting up books, the immersing students in books and exposing them to read alouds where we can get that rich vocabulary. I also think when we think about setting up our environment that is literacy rich, so having words that are meaningful to students are up on the wall and attached with visual symbols like the bathroom, for example, the coat rack, the cubbies. So they're building an understanding of what the words mean, but also what they look like in print, right? That we can use print as another way to communicate.
What about you, Stacey?
And again, I'm all about the child-led play and how that, builds the foundations and things that we can put. Well, let me back up. All play, I believe supports literacy. So kind of looking at our younger children, just make sure they have plenty of opportunity to play, but then also having books throughout the environment and having our blank paper and crayons throughout that they can bring into their play. And I find that when the play is of the child and they want to invite us to share with that or have a conversation with them, those are great opportunities that we can get that language going. We can have those conversations. If they've brought us something that they've drawn, we can say, "Tell me about it," and we can write, what it is that they've said. I think us being available when children are playing, and if they pick out a book that they want us to read to them, that's important. But again, I'm all about like that no matter what children are playing, whether it's blocks or dramatic play or sensory, they're building those visual perception, phonological awareness, and a physical development that's getting those foundations solid again for future reading and writing.
Yeah, I think too that you both spoke to that authenticity. And even just when you're building with blocks, being able to describe what they're doing and, almost dictate it out loud step by step. Sometimes when we talk about different behaviors that people are feeling challenged by and labeling those feelings, starting with really simple feelings words. And once they understand that feeling, layering more complex feelings so that they can have even juicier words to describe what they're talking about. Pulling out books that have harder words and maybe more words that are on them when they're ready to hear them. Finding those little moments to get into their play and ask them questions and get some of that comprehensive piece. And then also, Stacey, you talked about too that body movement. So, getting the blocks out, getting our big body movement out. I think that there are just so many different opportunities for literacy in our day and being able to really recognize that it's happening. And all of those really add up to that impact on children. I think it's a little bit of a dance, and I'm hearing that dance between you with that different, like, I think it's a little bit of that different perspective too from that kindergarten, which has a little bit more of that structure to it, versus like an infant toddler preschool, which has a little bit of more of that guided or that facilitated free flow to it. And it's a little bit of that dance. And I would love to hear from you, how can educators balance the need for structured learning and also think about some of those benefits for play-based, that child-led, and how can they do that dance for literacy in their programs?
And I think it's that recognizing that we have, like you said, it's the balance of it can be adult guided. I feel like the adult guided needs to be playful, engaging, interacting, and connecting to the children's world. So still keeping that in mind, but then making sure children then have that nice amount of time where they can completely be, in control and or in control of their play. But just making sure that we're being intentional when we are having those adult-led activities. And I think, Andrew, you mentioned earlier, you make sure we're crossing the midlines and we're, when we're reading books, we're having conversations and we're okay to stop and have the conversation. But I think recognizing, okay, if we're doing something, is it connecting with the children, or are we just doing it to check the boxes off? And if it's to check the boxes off, and you see that the children are not engaging with it, I think giving ourselves permission to go, okay, it's okay to scrap this, and then let's move on to something else that they're gonna, it's going to be more meaningful for them. But I definitely think it is a balance. But I think making sure in that balance, which is one of my big, one of the things I advocate a lot is making sure children get that child-led time. Because I think a lot of times we have gotten better as a profession at being very hands-on engaging. But I think we can take that step further and making sure we protect that child-led playtime as well, in our early learning environments.
So I do think that the beauty of balancing both play and structured literacy development lies in how you arrange your structured literacy block in kindergarten. So definitely making time for both. But what we do in our system is it's actually a ministry mandate, the 30 minutes of direct, explicit, systematic instruction, because of what we know of the vast body of evidence of the science of reading. So educators are responsible for that. And we're teaching across multiple modalities to help them discover these skills, but we're embedding lots of intentional practice and giving them, actually creating those opportunities for them to engage in that purposeful practice of combining the letter and the sound, or the sound symbol relationships. So we do have that, followed by 30 minutes of small group instruction, where when we think about why this learning for this child at this time, kids are, we're going to hopefully create opportunities for them to engage in those authentic experiences through inquiry play that are meaningful for them, as well as giving chance an opportunity to participate in guided practice by the teacher. So that's an hour of the day. So the rest of the time, we might follow a similar process with math, but we have lots of time left in there for inquiry play, where if there's an early childhood educator and a teacher in the room, they can tag team, and one's watching the play and developing provocations, and one instructor might be pulling kids or engaging guided practice with students. So there is this mentality of, since direct explicit instruction and structured literacy and the science of reading have come to light in our schools, that there's no time to play anymore. And we don't believe in that in our system. We definitely have to intentionally create moments for inquiry play. We know it's important to the development of the child. So that how we structure that block becomes really, really important to get everything in.
Very, it's interesting hearing that the both sides of that structured and that child-led too. A question that popped into my brain while you were both talking, would any of your strategies or your definitions change if it was someone who maybe English isn't their first language and they're still learning English, how might literacy change for those children and supporting that within your early learning environments?
Yeah, that's a popular question down here, like especially in Texas, we have a lot of, children who are speaking Spanish and other languages as well. And I think, with our younger children, our infants, toddlers, preschoolers, how you learn language is hearing the phonemes, hearing those sounds. And so I think again that play structure or that play model helps with that because it gives children the opportunity to play with their peers, and then we as the adult can, have conversations with them so they are hearing that. And I think us when we're designing our environment, when we're looking at children playing and putting materials in that motivate them or entice them to play, again, making sure that maybe we're bringing books in of their home language so they feel a connection there. They have something that they might or that they're familiar with. But I think it's just, us again making sure children are hearing a lot of language, a lot of sounds, still reading to them, still singing. But yeah, they're bringing things into their environment that do connect to them.
I remember we had families that spoke three different languages at one point in our classroom, and we had this conversation about, can you bring in some words? And we had a list of words that we regularly used. And the one parent said, "Oh, I actually wrote a children's book in I think it was in Mandarin." And he brought in this book in Mandarin, and we had this really wonderful conversation. And I can't remember any of the words now, but we started learning it was Mandarin, Russian, and French. So it was a really great connecting opportunity too to figure out what happens at home and what are some of those words. What about you, Andrea? How would you support English as a second language or third language?
Yeah, so we do know that students who are multilingual language learners do need structured literacy too. But they need that added layer of understanding the vocabulary and what the words mean. So when we look at multilingual learners, we have in our classroom a sound wall that is like we start with a vowel valley and a consonant wall, and kids are understanding how the sound and the symbol connect, how the grapheme and the phoneme are connected. So the how we spell the sounds. So in with multilingual language learners, we really need to A, see their home language as an asset because they've already developed an understanding of the rules of syntax and oral how we speak in oral language in their home language. But we then need to help them identify the meaning of high frequency words in English. So when we are using the sound wall in class, we have worked with our multilingual learner families, and we have asked questions and asked families to identify meaningful pieces and meaningful places or things in their culture, so be it food or music or art. And we've brought those things into the classroom, and our multilingual language teachers, they use what's called a culture, we call it a culturally responsive sound wall. So where multilingual learners will have their own little sound wall folder, but in the folder is visual images to help them create the understanding of how the sounds and the symbols work together. So, for example, if we are working on grapheme T, spelling the T sound and the two sounds that TH makes, for example, we might start with T on its own and give the student a picture of a tuk-tuk if they were, for example, from the Kerala state of India. And this actually happened to me when I was virtual teaching. My kindergarten student was in India and a tuk-tuk went by. So we use that. Oh, tuk-tuk. T. Can we get our mouth ready and say that first sound of tuk-tuk of the T in Tuk Tuk, and then we would bring the writing piece into it so that they can create those experiences. And then we would do the same thing when they're ready for digraphs and understanding the how our voice box goes on for some words when we look at the digraph TH versus other words that stay silent. So the two sounds of that, and trying to get real world experiences that are connected to them and their life. So that's one way that we engage multilingual learners, and with that huge focus on vocabulary development.
It's kind of full circle right into what we were talking about before, is literacy for children is really rooted in real world experiences that they mm-hmm. can relate to, whether they are multilingual, they're second language learning, third language learning, whether they're, you know, only speak one language. It really is rooted in what they're familiar with. And that's one of the foundational pieces to learning about language. Mm-hmm. Both of you have highlighted something that I love to talk about, an environment. And I think about the environment in an early learning classroom versus a kindergarten classroom. How we set up our space can really spark or stifle our inquiry, as well as literacy and language. What are some ways that educators and teachers can intentionally set up their learning environments to foster literacy? Are there any specific setups, any materials, any tips or strategies that you would share to our listeners? And we'll get started here with, I'll throw it to Andrea first.
Yeah, so when we look at setting up a literacy-rich environment, in kindergarten we would start with setting up the sound wall. And perhaps the whole sound wall is set up, but all of the sounds, all of the letters that spell the sounds, they're flips over. And as we get to the point in the UFLY Foundation's manual where we introduce a piece of the sound wall, we'll flip one over so that it's gradually revealed to students at a time where they're ready for it in their instruction, but also to reduce that stimulation, so not having too much up there on the wall. So that's one of the ways that we set up our classroom through the materials. We also make it essential for mini whiteboards to be in use so that kids are always using tools like the mini whiteboard and the dry erase marker to practice their printing formation, along with those other sensory bins such as like rice, sand, shaving paper, shaving cream, and so on. So we have those up as well. And then, like, in terms of strategies, the choral response, so activating their ability to recall what is taught by chorally having students respond at the same time. And then we can see, looking for feedback, who might need some more support, like at the U table, for example, where we can give them more specific feedback and more chances to respond to the learning. And then in terms of our another strategy that we use, ensuring that we progress through the different steps of literacy development at a perky pace. So we have 8 steps of UFLY, and they're all timed and they're quick. And they're I stole that from Dr. Anita Archer, says the perky pace. That's really important to keeping the conversation moving and keeping the learning going.
What about you, Stacey? What would you say for your literacy-rich environment?
You know, and again, looking at like infant toddler preschoolers, I think kind of going back to the mindset that all play is supporting all the foundations of literacy. So I think kind of taking just some reassurance in that and making sure, again, that our environment is meeting the children's ecosystems and what's important to them. But if we're going to talk some things, I guess, things that we might typically label a little bit more literacy, you know, again, blank paper and crayons is so important, because when we look at that writing development, how mark making turns to scribbling, turns to pictures, turns into stories, you know, that starts with young children just having that access to the paper. And I think it's really important that they have access at any time, that they can bring it into their play as they see fit. And if we allow that, and with that, you know, allow that repetition of it, we'll see that progression of that development. If you are bringing things into the environment that connect to the alphabet, again, keeping in mind children have that print awareness. So we're talking more of our 3 and 4 year olds. If we're bringing things in that connect with the alphabet, making sure, again, that they are the letters of the children in the classroom, not just doing the entire environment in one letter or putting the entire alphabet out there right there, because that might be overwhelming. But again, what's connecting with the children? And like I said, in books of their interest that they want to read over and over, or books that if we've read at group time, us putting those into the play environment so that children can experience them past group time, and look at it as much as they want. But again, I'm going to come back to just really trusting in that all play supports literacy. So I think it's a matter of us looking and going, okay, I know this might look different, but let me show and let me, relay to the stakeholders. This is how sensory, the sensory tub or the block center or the science and math center, although we might not typically label them as literacy, they're still very critical in developing those literacy foundations.
Keeping that conversation going and, having conversations with families about what those expectations are, where children are at developmentally. I love that idea of pulling them into your room too and highlighting that as part of your tour, right? So this is, you see some science pieces here, and there's clipboards, and there's pens, and there's crayons here. And although it might not be a word they're writing down, it's mark making, which leads to telling a story, which leads to literacy. That we have some of our alphabets over here, and we do keep them covered so that it's not overwhelming, and we focus on a sound or a letter. That we have the blocks and that cross body movement and that big body movement. And in our kitchen, we have cookbooks. And so I think it's everywhere, and it's being able to really highlight that and have that conversation. I feel like we've covered so much. Before we wrap up, though, I wanted to hand it over to you, Stacey and Andrea. Is there anything that you really wanted to add or really wanted to talk about and share with everyone who's listening?
Maybe just, to kind of wrap up what I've been talking about with the younger children is, I encourage everybody to kind of change the mindset and really think of literacy as development. What needs to develop to support future reading and writing? Instead of skipping those foundational steps, let's build that foundation first. Let's develop that first and then go from there.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So great conversation today, and thank you for inviting me. And I guess I would just end off in thinking about when students are ready, that once they enter kindergarten, they are ready. We know that they're ready, that the science of reading tells us that they're ready to immerse themselves in that literacy-rich environment and to begin practicing those purposeful skills. So in kindergarten, we would emerge from blank paper that students might use when they're 2 or 3 years old, and we then go to the sky, grass, ground. I don't know if you've seen those templates to help students with the printing formation. But again, if they're not ready for the pen paper yet, getting them to build words with Play-Doh and all those opportunities to use those multiple sensory bins to help them coordinate their fine motor skills. But we do encourage lines at that point, right? So it's interesting to see the development from early years in preschools into kindergarten and how we bridge that gap through using templates called sky, grass, ground, and looking at the formation of the letters. Yeah, so it's very been engaging for me and really helping me reflect on all of those great pieces that have to happen, or that we should be embracing from birth to five, really.
I know I really enjoyed our conversation, and I think that everyone who's listening is going to walk away with a really strong understanding of what literacy is, how to incorporate that throughout our classroom. And not only that, but also to think about literacy from your infant, toddler, preschool, right into kindergarten, and what that transition looks like in supporting children where they're at. So, thank you both so much for being here. It was
Thank
wonderful.
you.
Thank you. It's great to meet all of you.
Yes. Great to meet y'all too.
We hope you found this conversation with Stacy and Andrea both inspiring and thought-provoking. It was so wonderful to hear from two professionals whose work spans the early years and who share a deep commitment to making literacy meaningful and accessible for all children. To learn more about Stacy's work and to explore her book, The Whole Alphabet Child, visit the links in our show notes, where you'll also find her free literacy guide and social media pages. To connect with Andrea, head over to powerreaders.ca or follow at Power Readers on Facebook and Instagram for tools, strategies, and ideas to support literacy across K-12. Be sure to visit us at eccdc.org to see what's happening at the ECCDC, and don't forget to leave a comment or share your thoughts on the podcast. We love hearing from you. Until next time, stay curious, keep moving, and let the play be the page where literacy begins.